As the host of this show, I'm used to asking the questions. But I also frequently receive questions, especially from people like yourself who want to take their interest in wine and spirits even further. The question I get the most is, what's the best way to really learn about wine? And my answer to that is simple. Taste lots and lots of wine, read everything you can, and take courses with your local Wine and Spirit Education Trust approved program provider. I say that because that's what I did. I studied for my WSET qualifications in Boston, and the educators of those courses, people like Bill Nesto, Sandy Block, and Alex Murray, really set me on a path for discovery. Recently, I interviewed one of those educators for this program, and the first thing I did when we sat down together in my apartment was that I told him how important he had been to my career. Because I think about things he taught me over 10 years ago, almost every single day. If you want to develop a deeper understanding of wine, spirits, or sake, seek out your own mentors with the Wine and Spirits Education Trust during WSET Week USA, coming up on May 1st through May 7th. During that time, approved program providers all over the country will be opening their doors to people like yourself to join them for a taste of WSET courses that go from grape to grain. Get in on it. Go to WSETglobal.com for more information about WSET Week USA on May 1st through May 7th. That's WSETGLOBAL.com for more information. The Wine and Spirits Education Trust has helped me a lot, and it can help you a lot too. $7.50 isn't just a powerful search engine for wholesale buyers. $7.50 also helps you quickly contact your sales reps with orders, and it keeps your order history organized and easy to find. If communicating with sales reps is a part of your daily routine, this is the most efficient method available for saving your time and avoiding headaches. $7.50 ordering comes packed with other features as well, such as text message alerts to your sales reps and transparent order histories. If you haven't already signed up for $7.50, you can create your own free account today at 750.com. 750 is the best and easiest way to search multiple distributor portfolios for wholesale pricing and availability, and the best way to find the details you need to understand your purchases better. Over 40,000 top on- and off-premise buyers all across the country have already embraced 750 for one simple reason. It saves them time on every order, each and every day. Find out more and sign up at 750.com.
I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today. Alessandro Masnaghetti of Inogia on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm fine.
So you were born in Milan.
Yeah, I was born in Milan in 1962, so it's almost 55 years. And, you know, simple family, no interest in wine. My dad bought wine from a small vineyard near Novara in the Alto Piemonte region, but the wine was really, really terrible. Maybe this is the reason why I started so late to taste wine, because he asked me to drink this wine, but really it was so hard. It was a red wine, sparkling wine, with green tannins, acid. Oh my God, this was too much for me. And this is why maybe I started to taste wine so late, because I started to drink wines, I suppose it was 20, 25 years old, something like this. Because my passion at that time was not wine, but was food. My dream was to become a chef, something like this. I don't know the name in English, when you prepare cookies, something like this.
A pastry chef.
Exactly. This was my passion. But fortunately, life gave me something different, because I know that the life of a chef is so hard, is so difficult, it's just a crazy life. So wine is much better. much better. It's a, you know, it's a crazy life as well, but it's easier, far easier to be a wine taster, wine journalist than a chef. And every time close in the kitchen, oh my God.
But originally you picked another easy career, which was nuclear engineer.
Yes, it was the last part of my first life. Or the first part of my second life, I don't know. I graduated as a nuclear engineer in, I don't remember exactly, it was 87, 88, something like this. But I remember that it was exactly the same year when in Italy we had a referendum against the nuclear energy. So I was graduated and 1 month later I was out of the business. Okay, I'm sorry. Hey, you know, but yeah, I have to say I'm a lucky man anyway. So after this, it was not a problem. I was passionate in wine and I was in contact with Luigi Veronelli, was the most famous wine journalist at that time. And he invited me in Bergamo. He lived in Bergamo, very nice villa. Very nice cellar, with a fantastic cellar, such a beautiful wines, but not only the Monfortino, for example, but very tiny producer, unknown label. Everything was there in that cellar. But anyway, he proposed me to write an article about the Alto Piemonte again.
Your dad's favorite place.
Yeah, but you know, I was born in Milano, but my grandfather came from Oleggio, was a small town near the Alto Piemonte, really 20 kilometers from Fara, Sizzano, Gemme, and so on. It was quite natural for me to start to taste these wines, no? And so Luigi proposed me to write an article about the Alto Piemonte wines. I was a rookie, maybe less than a rookie. I was nobody, and you know, and he asked me to write this article for this magazine that was the most famous magazine and most exclusive magazine in Italy. And I said, this man is crazy, but anyway, this is an opportunity. I would try to do this, and I write this article about Fara, Sizzano, Bocca, and Gemme. And he was really happy. I have to say, he was always positive with everybody. So, but in that case, he was very happy with this article. The article was published within 2 months, something like this. And then he started to press me and say, Alessandro, why don't you work with me? You are a nuclear engineer. Yeah, yes, of course, the nuclear power plant will stop it, but you have studied as a nuclear engineer and you have to go to your father and your mother and say, okay, guys, I'm gonna change and I'm gonna write and taste wine. It's not easy. They have been very, very gentle with me. They said, okay, if you want to do this, it's not a problem. Come on, go. Because, Veronelli at that time was very, very famous. So for them, the word Luigi Veronelli was something really, really important. So I started to work with him.
But how did you meet him originally?
Luigi?
Si.
I was doing my military service in Sabaudia, that is 100 kilometers south of Rome. And when you are starting as a lieutenant, you have not so much to do during your day. And I started to visit restaurant because, I repeat, at that time I was more passionate with food than wine. So I started to visit restaurant and sending him letter about my visit to the restaurant saying, okay, it's okay, I agree with your notes about this. And what was really incredible for me that he answered. Usually when you send a letter to a man like this, nobody answers. And one day I received the letter signed Luigi Veronelli. And I said, oh, oh my God. And I was thinking about this really 2 weeks ago, and I said, I'm so stupid because I have not this copy, I have not this letter with, I don't know where it is, this letter, because it's the starting point of my new life, and I have not this letter, or maybe I have this, but I don't know where it is.
Like you dreamed it.
No, it's not a dream. It's true, because I received two letters, I'm sure. And is in the first one, the second one, I don't remember. He wrote me, Alessandro, when you come back to the north, please come to Bergamo to have a lunch with me or dinner, I don't remember. It was quite usual for him. It was very open-minded, and he liked it a lot to meet people, different people. So every day when I started to work with him, every day in Bergamo, there was someone for lunch or for dinner, every time. So maybe a producer, maybe a cheese producer, a chef, some whatever. I do not remember a day without an invitato. I don't know, and someone else to be there for lunch or for dinner. And for example, I met my wife. It was not my wife at that time, but we met at the Seminario Veronelli. That was a structure made by Luigi to promote the wine and the knowledge of wine. So there was a scientific side of wine that was not so familiar with Luigi, but he knew at that time that was important, so created this Seminario. And I met my future wife at the Seminario. And maybe 2 weeks later, he invited me. Maybe it was my first lunch at the home of Luigi. So I went for lunch, and he said, oh, Alessandro, now a young woman is coming for lunch as well. I want to present her because she's a nice person. And my future wife arrived, and we said, but we knew very well. We met 2 weeks ago at the Seminario, and he said, oh my God, this is not a surprise for you. But anyway, it's very important for us because our life together, me and my wife, started with Luigi. So for us, Luigi is something special. Something special. He was not a wine taster. He said that without any problem, he was not a wine taster. He was a wine lover. And this is maybe something more, something more, because our generation, I don't know you, but my generation started to be a wine taster as a, like a serial killer, like a machine. There was always a side for the passion, because you cannot do this kind of work if you don't have the passion. But it was not so strong as for Luigi, because for Luigi the wine was a real world. It was wine, but it was first of all people. And for our generation, as in particular at the beginning, wine was wine. Wine was the research of quality. The people, for me, for example, came later. I started to be interested in people after maybe 7, 8 years doing this kind of work. At the beginning, for me, wine was wine. I have to know everything around Italy. And there was a maniac side of wine tasting. And then I started to understand that wine is not only wine, it's people. And now I understand that the wine is a blend of these two, wine and people. But sometimes you see there are journalists that create such an iconic producer that seem to be Einstein or, you know, Dante Alighieri. I don't want to offend anybody, you know, but I think that Dante Alighieri is Michelangelo, is Leonardo, is true genius. We are normal people. Even wine producers are normal people like us. So it's important to have a balance in everything. When you taste, when you write, when you talk to someone else. And this is, I reached this idea in the last 7-10 years. Because I've seen in this world so many exaggeration. Oh, well, something that is more than wine. I think that we have to be more relaxed, more concentrated on everyday life in wine.
You studied outside of Italy for a while.
Sure. It was at the beginning. At the beginning from 1990, 1991 until 96, something like this. And it was really important for me. Because in Italy, sometimes maybe in the States as well, enologists say that the only person that can judge a wine is an enologist. I do not agree with this, of course. But at the same time, I think that if you want to start to taste wine and write about wine and give scores to the wine, it's important to understand how, in which way this wine is produced. So it was for me really important to have a basic knowledge of enology and viticulture, and maybe something more than a basic knowledge. And the university in Bordeaux at that time was very alive. And there was a small group of Italian that went to every course in Bordeaux. I remember very well, we were in the same classroom. I was me, my wife, Federico Staderini, and Marco Palanti for Castello di Ama, Vittorio Fiore, and many other people following this courses. And it was fantastic because, you know, it's something you need. I believe that it is something you need if you want to write about wine, but it's also a way to open your mind. So to listen to someone else who lives in another country, who makes different wines, and to understand their opinion and their way of look at the wines. And this is really, really important. And this is something that I have not cultivated as much as I wanted. Because when you live in Italy, when you taste wine of Italy, there are so many wines to taste that you are forced to stay in Italy. And this was something hard for me, because I wanted every time to taste something different. You also know, tasting wine from France, tasting wine from Germany, tasting wine from California, but you did not have the time at that era. So it was something for me, as an Italian taster, something limiting, a limitation, you know. But anyway.
You took enology courses as well as tasting courses while you were in Bordeaux.
Yeah, until 1996. Because, you know, at that it was fantastic at that period, because there was Denis de Bourdieu as a teacher and Yves Glory as a teacher. So the pioneer of the new enology in Bordeaux, it's incredible. Denis de Bourdieu, it was, at the beginning, for an Italian, was not so easy to interact with Denis, because it was so French, so against the Italian, so the Italian was rubbish. Now, people and wine. But when you started to knew him, to know him, so it was a great man. It was a really, I repeat, it's important to be open-minded. And Denis was more than open-minded, because he could talk about philosophy and Barcavilla, you know?
Oh, because it's on the label. Clo Floridan had a ship on it.
Exactly, exactly, right. And so it was fantastic to listen to him and his idea about the wine.
And so then you came back, and 95 was kind of a big year for you in terms of responsibilities and opportunities.
So the responsibilities started a little bit earlier because, I don't know why, but I repeat, I was a lucky guy. I was a lucky guy, so I have no explanation for this. But, it's only fortune. Because in 92, Luigi makes me editor-in-chief of the newsletter. It's not exact. I was not the true editor-in-chief. When you are the because he was the editor-in-chief, I was right the level under. But anyway, it was a big opportunity. And in 93, I started to make the wine guide for him with Daniel Thomas's. So it was fantastic. Great opportunity because there were no rules at all, absolutely. So he was the commander-in-chief, but he never said, no, this score is not correct, you have to change, or completely free. So if you want to give 95 to this one, it's perfect for me. I do not agree, but you are free to use the score that you want. And it's incredible because there is in a publishing house, there is always someone that decide what is right, what is wrong, usually. And in that case, no. But there was a problem that sometimes when he didn't agree with your judgment, he wrote it. you know? So in an article or in the wine guide, there is your score, for example, 95 or 85, and the line under, I do not agree with Alessandro, or I do not agree with Daniel. For me, this one is much better than this. And you say, oh my God, you know. So the big boss say that you are wrong. He gives you the opportunity to write what you want, but he feels free to write that is that he do not agree with you. Wow. So, you know, when you find a book with this different judgment, you know the reader, the producer starts with, oh, well, my God, have you seen? You have used 85, but Luigi has given 95. This is true. This is much better. You do not understand nothing. You sound like this. Yeah, it was scary. But, you know, you have to pay a price. you can be lucky, but you cannot be lucky 100% of the time. So you have to pay the price. And it was a great price to pay, you know. It was really nice.
So I think some of the things that are really associated with him in terms of wine are looking at small producers, artisanal producers as opposed to industrial-sized producers, looking at crews, taking the Burgundy model and saying, why don't you do single crus? And then some French winemaking techniques, like the use of barrique, is something that he seemed interested in.
You're talking about Luigi.
Sisi.
Yeah. Yes, it's true. But if Luigi had to choose between small producer and big producer, the choice would be always small producer. But I think that is also a way to, it's just a provocation, you know, we can say this, because it was a great friend with Piero Antinori, with Mario Inciso della Rocchetta. So we cannot classify this producer as small producer, you know. I think that Luigi was interested in clever people, in intelligent people. Yes, then for a kind of provocation, maybe he said, I prefer the baddest of the artisanal wine to the most refined of the industrial wine, something like this. But you know, it was a living school for Luigi, because he went to California in maybe late 80s with Giacomo Bologna, Maurizio Zanella, and they started to see what the other people were doing. So Andrei Chelichev, all these things. And he proposed to use the French barrel to make this wine. And I believe that it was a great idea. I want to say this because the young generation look at the 90s as a terrible period, a period of unnatural wine that do not respect the terroir. Yes, maybe, but it was such a beautiful period because there was an energy that you cannot find now. Many times now, wine is business. At that time, wine was wine, and yes, of course, there was being business as well, because you have to live. But every day you had a new wine, a new idea, a new grape variety, and we did, because we, the journalist, and we, the producer, all together, we did a lot of mistakes in that period, but really big mistakes. But we were honest. I think that it was necessary to make that mistakes, because after that mistakes, we realized that the solution was a different one, was not that one, but it was important. We have to do these mistakes, and what the new generation do not understand now is that it was necessary, and they only look at the wrong side of the story. And you know, if you look at the Piedmont as well, you know, the Langhain generation, if you look at the story now, you can say, okay, the wine were not so representative of the terroir and so on. But if you have lived that period, you are certain, sure, that without that generation, the Piedmont now would be very, very different, but not in the better sense of the phrase. They have permitted to the region to increase at the speed of light, really. Without them, we could be now 10 years later, 10 years in late compared to what we are now. And I agree with some old style wine lover that in that time, producers like Bruno Giacosa or Giacomo Conterno or Bartolo Mascarello or Beppe Rinaldi were not so, I cannot say not so famous, but were not so well considered compared to the new generation. And this is true. This was one of the mistakes that I said before. This is true. But at the same time, I'm sure that also these properties, also this winery, also this producer take benefit from this new wave, because even their wine prices increased in the time. So I know you cannot measure everything with money, but anyway, it's something, when you produce wine to make a business, it's important if your price increases in time.
Well, I remember Lorenzo Accamasso, when I visited him,
he
told me, if the land prices are higher now, we have to thank the people who used barrique because the land prices were not like this before.
I've never heard this from Lorenzo, but this is a really honest statement. Really. Far from me, I don't want to glorify this because I'm a wine taster. I was a wine taster, now a little bit less. I am a map maker, but I want to be, I don't want to say this philosophy is better than this one. I don't want, it's not interesting for me. Fortunately, now there is a very huge market and every style, every idea has its own place. So there are so many different wines, so many good wines made in different style. It's okay for me, it's not a problem. But anyway, it's a very honest statement from Accomasso. This is true.
At the same time, I don't think you could have pulled off the MAP project working with all those different producers if you were very strict about only liking certain styles. You know, if you said, oh, I'm only friends with these 10 producers, I don't think you could have made the maps because you couldn't have had the cooperation from everybody.
Yes, for sure. I cannot say that I want to be friend of everybody because you cannot be friend of everybody, but I want to be transparent with everybody. I want to be free that I don't like your wine, but this does not mean that I don't like you and what are you doing. This is different. It's my opinion about the wine, but I respect you as a wine producer. You don't have to change your style because of me. I keep my idea that, and that's all. And this is for me always very important to be respectful with everybody. And maybe this is the reason that I can make this map now and in the past as well, because the producer usually knows that everything is clear. There is no mystery. I do not prefer this or this or this one. I'm trying to make something that could last and help everybody. This is why on my book of Barolo, this is a very brief dedication to the Barolo producer, no one excluded. This was very important for me because it doesn't matter to me if you use small barrel, big barrel, if you make 5 days fermentation or 40 days fermentation, it doesn't matter to me. It's not a problem for me. This should be a book for everybody. And I want to speak of everybody. I'm so tired of this struggle of, again, the old generation and new generation. What does it mean? I don't really, really. So boring.
But one of the things that's cool about your career at the same time is that you've interviewed some older generation people that were maybe neglected somewhat during their career in terms of media attention.
Yes. You have used a very good word, neglected. And this one was for sure Beppe Collo. And it was the owner and the former enologist of Prenotto. An incredible man. A man, I don't know if in English we can say this, is a vertical man. You cannot bend him. You can broke it. Him, but you cannot ban him. And maybe this is the reason I like him very much. When we talk, it's not the right expression to say talk with Beppe, because you have to listen. there is no way to talk with him. Sometimes you can ask a question, but then you have only to listen, because he starts to talk about it. It's a river. It's a big river floating. But what is incredible is that you cannot say this to Beppe, because it's better not to do it. But if you look at his career, he was, in the 70s, a pioneer of new technique, new styles. So less maceration, concentration of the must, the mosto. It was the first one in Italy to concentrate the must.
So he kind of cooked it a little bit, right?
Sorry?
Did he use heat to do that?
Yeah, sure. But it was he explained me this new technique because it was a concentrator made expressly for him. So he used heat, but very fast. So you didn't burn the must and the flavor and so on. And the result was very nice. But if you think Beppe Colla, that now everybody looks at him as a old school man, okay? In the 70s, was concentrating the must. It's incredible. This is, if you are enough open-minded, explain you a lot of things because, you know, everything has its time, everything has its season. So Beppe, when he was young, he was a pioneer. But you cannot say this to Beppe. You cannot compare him to the new generation of barrel generation because he go crazy. But in your mind, you can do it. And it's not far from truth, I suppose. On the other hand, you know, he was neglected. And the problem is that all the other people were not so... They had a lot of things to tell you, to the fantastic stories, but they do not want to tell these stories. For example, Bruno Giacosa, you know, he knew a lot of things about crews and so on. I've tried 2-3 times to be with him an afternoon or during the morning and drive around the hills. No way to have information. No, it was very, very difficult. And many other people were like Bruno. The only one that was different was Aldo Conterno. And I do not remember nobody else.
It was a generational thing.
The only one surviving now is Beppe. And it was the only one who can... But the most important thing about Beppe is that he can tell you a story about wine, yes, but he can tell you even more stories about people and tradition. And this is the most important thing because he is a living heritage. And you cannot understand that style of wine without thinking at that era, at that age, what were the relationship between human being, between the owner and the peasant. Wow. Well, you cannot understand the wine if you do not know this human relation. And, for example, many people, when look at the hill of Barolo and Barbaresco now, says, oh, they have planted Nebbiolo everywhere. Not wrong, but not 100% right. Because there was an explanation. There is an explanation to this. So if you go back to the 50s, 60s, or even the 20s of the last century, the economy, the Barolo was not so important like now. So the people living in that cascina or in that estates, we can call it estates, the first goal of every day was to survive. Not to make Barolo. So it was important to have Dolcetto, that is an early ripening variety, to have Barbera, that is big production grapes, and then to have a good quantity of Barolo, that is for fine wines. And maybe you can have Sfresa, something else, because you have to survive. you must have the money to buy a new pair of shoes to your children. So this is why I say you cannot compare that period with this period. The vineyards, why? Okay, now there are more vineyards than in the past. Yes, of course, because they needed peaches. They had animals at that time. So in the 50s or in the 40s, if you have only vineyards, okay, how can you feed your animals? With grapes? No, I don't think so. So it was a different, not only culture, a different way of life.
And one of the things that Beppe Cola did, partially because of Veronelli's influence, is that he introduced crew-labeled wines.
Yes, yes, this is for sure. Veronelli was really hard about this. For him, the vineyard was most important thing. I've never discussed with him about this, but I think because he saw in this evolution, so in this, in putting the label, putting the name of the vineyard on the label, a way for the small producer to be more respected or to have the respect that they didn't have in the past. And for Luigi was very important. This was a way for him to say, come on, people, you need to be respected. There is many producers that were born in the 50s can tell you that in the 70s, when everybody went to the Fiat industries in Torino to make a living, and they were remaining in the hillside, and they went to the discotheque on Saturday, no girl wanted to dance with them. because they were working not in the Fiat, but they were working in the vineyards. And, oh my God, you're not, you're not a good choice. And now things are different, unfortunately, and maybe because of Luigi Veronelli's choice. And about this, about the use of the name of the vineyards on the label, anyway, there is a different way to approach, because for Luigi, no matter the name of that you put on the label, it was important to put a name on the label. So you can use Vigna Fiore or Cerequio, or it was not so important. For people like Beppe Cola, it was important that when you use a name of a crew on a label, it's important that this crew has something specific, something that you cannot recognize in the glass of wine. And this does not mean that it's better than another wine. It means only that it's different. So if you are different, it's important to give you a particular name. And this is why I don't want to tell you the name of the crews, but in his career, Beppe has made different single vineyard vinification, and Canobie and Busia lasted very long. Many other were one vintage, two vintage, not more. And the name were also important. Important name if you look at
a map, maybe a map that you did.
Yeah. And but he stopped to make this single vineyard wine because they were excellent wine, but there were nothing so special compared to another crew. So this is why he focused on Busia and Canobie. This is explanation from Beppe. And I can agree with him. When you make a crew, it's important that it has its own personality. But it's, you know, it's a long story. And we are a so young country that we have to learn a lot of things. In Barolo, they have made a big work of delimitation. It's very, very important. Some people say that it's not perfect. For me, it doesn't matter that it's not perfect. For me, it's more important that we have the limitation. It's more important this. So we can discuss a lot of things, a lot of detail, okay. But the most important thing is that finally, after 20 years, we have an official delimitation. Okay, this is a starting point. And if you are clever, you can start from here and do something better. Or maybe, for example, decide if you have 160 crews now, okay, we can decide in 20 years to have 80, to cut half of the crews, because we understand that they are not so important, because or nobody used this name. Okay, great. But it's important to have a starting point to start to think about the crews.
And it's actually been something you've been doing for a long time. Originally, you wrote some magazine articles about the crews.
Yes. This is a complicated story because I started to work on the cruise in 1994 when I was working with Luigi, because I was very passionate of maps in general, even at that time. And I said, okay, but I want to do something in wine mapping. And at that time, you know, I was a rookie, as I told you before, so me and Daniel Thomas were on the same level officially, but you know, he's older than me and he started before me, so some appellation was on his side. So he tasted the Barolo and I tasted Barbaresco. You know, but when you are a rookie, it's not a problem. It's a big chance. It's a big opportunity as well to taste Barbaresco. But so I decided, okay, I want to do something on the cruise of Barbaresco. And I proposed this wine mapping to Luigi. And I said, we can map Barbaresco, then map Neve, then Trezzo, and start a series of map. I was so happy. Fantastic idea. As always with Luigi, everything was fantastic. And okay, well, great, great, great. We have to start it. And I started to work on Barbaresco. I found many, many historical information about this. I started to make a classification of the crews. But the problem is that we were not one step ahead. We were maybe 100 steps. It was too early for the... So this map was a real fiasco. He printed, I suppose, 2,000 copies, and he sold maybe 20 copies. And so we look at each other in the eyes and we said, maybe it's better to wait. And so we decided to stop. But in my mind, there was always the idea to make a really very detailed mapping of Italy, and in Barolo Barbaresco in particular. And this is why in 2007 I started again to map. But there was another reason as well. I was finally able to manage every step of the production as you, because this is a very, very expensive work, because you have to travel, you have to be there. And if you take the material and you bring to a designer and say, okay, produce me a map with this. Oh my God, it costs a lot of money. And at that time, 10 years ago, I started to manage all the different steps, and I started to draw by myself the map. And the other thing is important, in that period, the first satellite images started to be available, not of good quality, of course, because it was very difficult to match this image with the cadastral map, but you know, it was a source of information. So I decided, okay, with this one I can do something good. And fortunately, I published this first map of the second life of my map making in 2007 in the newsletter Energia. But that time, because I remember what happened with Luigi Veronelli, so I said, okay, I want to do this, but be careful, guy. So I have printed this map in a small size, A3 size, inside the newsletter to see the reaction of the subscribers, of the wineries, and so on, and to see, okay, if it doesn't work again, it's not a great problem, it's not a great expense of money. But if I print a large map, okay, it's start to be something more hard to sustain. But fortunately, the answer was positive, so I started to produce 3-4 maps a year, and I'm here talking with you.
And the rise of phone apps is probably helpful too. The fact that people can just download it and they don't even have to have it physically shipped to them. Or...
I'm a nuclear engineer, and I'm really fascinated by digital world. But if you want to make a living from this work, from this project, paper is so important. The digital app or the website, yes, are important for sure. But the percentage of customers, if you compare the two sides, paper and digital, paper is much more, 200% more than digital subscribers. And I am happy anyway, because the digital application give you the opportunity to have all the information very, very fast, and to see the satellite images or geolocation with the new version of my app. If you are in the middle of Vigna Rionda, there is a pin showing where you are and following you in the Vigna Rionda. This is amazing. But a map is made to be printed. And a map, because you can take a map, put in the bag, put in the car. The map are made to be used. The atlas, the route atlas that you are in the car, it's always damaged, no? And you love it because it's damaged. And your wife says, you have to change this book, it's damaged. And you say, no, why? It's new. It's a new one. It's perfect. And that's it.
So, I can only imagine. For me, it's like sort of a dream to just go to the vineyards and be like, where does this go to? And walk out with the vintner and see and feel each one and see how they're different. I mean, it's almost, for me, it's like an amazing activity to spend.
Yes, but I have to say that, this is so difficult in English, but I will try. When I make this mapping, usually I don't go to the vineyards with the producer. I want to be there alone. And I want them to see me that I am alone in the vineyards. Because I want to know something more than them on the vineyards. I want to show to them that I love this region so much that I knew every single row of vineyards, every single detail. And I'm so happy that when I talk with them and they say, this is wrong, this map is wrong because the parcel is different here. I say, no, it's not like this. You think that is not correct? Come on, take the car. We can go there and verify. And this is, maybe you are right. No, and this is nice for me because I repeat, it's a way to show them that maybe sometimes I love their land more than they do. And again, producer must be proud of their land. And this is one of the reasons that I make this kind of mac, in particular in a region where there is not a great tradition or no tradition at all about cruise and subzone and like this, like Montefalco, like Orvieto, that usually nobody cares about this appellation compared to Montalcino or Chianti Classico. But I think there is an historical potential down there. And they do not know how to talk about their region. They are always repeating the same story that they have heard from other producers from other region. No, you have to try to explain your region. It's not important that it's the most important wine region in the world or is that the wines are so great, but you have to explain your story, your tradition, why this place is called in this way. Okay, the wine maybe is not so good. Well, it doesn't matter. You have to start to talk about your where you live. You have to say, first of all, because people, when sometimes happen that some producer ask me to make a map for them, no? And they start from zero. And they want to arrive to 100 in 5 seconds. And he said, no, you cannot do this. You cannot do this in Barolo. They took 20 years to make a serious delimitation, 20 years. And you are an unknown region. You cannot start from zero and become a Barolo in 1 week. Absolutely no. The first thing that you have to do to make is that say who are you and where you are. It seems simple, stupid, but it's so important because there are so many people in the States, in Finland, in Sweden, in South Africa, in Japan that even do not know where is this Italy. And if you do not start saying who you are and where you are, it's useful because you cannot explain to a Japanese about the cruise or of Orvieto, for example, if he doesn't know where Orvieto is or where Italy is. So this is really important for me and many other things, because when you talk to the producer, every time in their mind, there is the soil. Maybe this comes from Burgundy. I don't know, because French people are very able to tell this story, this kind of story. And maybe in their region is simpler than here, because Burgundy, the slopes are very similar, more gentle than here. And I think that the soil is so important when you talk about the cruise and vineyards, but it's not the only one factor that you have to use. Because very well the hillside of Barolo. From the top part of the Brunate and the lower part of Brunate is 200 meters of difference in altitude. So if you combine the soils, the exposure, the altitude, the rootstocks, the clones, the training of vineyards, you understand perfectly that you cannot make a delimitation of cruise based only on soils. But every time when you talk to the producer, the first thing is that, we have the geological map. We can use the geological map starting from here. No, no. I believe that you have to start from the landscape, for example. The landscape is something that you can explain easily. A hill is a hill. If you have two hills and you look at these two hills, it's very easy to find a difference. So one maybe is more gentle in slope, the other one is steeper, and the one is lower, the other one is higher, and there is a valley in the middle. There are many reference points that even the normal people can understand. A valley is a valley. A hill is a hill. If you talk about people about this kind of soil, this is clay, this is limestone, they start to say, what is limestone? No, but a valley is a valley. A hill is a hill. And another thing, for example, for me, sometimes people are walking around like truffle dogs, you know, looking at changing in soils. Oh my, oh, this soil is a little bit different from the other one. Sometimes you don't even need to look at the soils. It's enough to look at the vegetation, you know? So you have only to walk around and look at what is happening around you. And you have the change in vegetation. It's a first signal that something is changing. Maybe it's the soil, maybe it's the climate, maybe it's the exposure, but it's something that, okay, this is something different. You start to think about it, and you can find it in many places. In Barolo, it's a little bit more, it's more difficult because the vineyard is so, there are so many vineyards that it's difficult to see this changing in vegetation. But in Chianti Classico, it's incredible. It's incredible. If there is a road, a white road, an unpaved road that goes from Fronte Rotoli to Vagliano, and you drive with your car along this road, always in the forest, no vineyard at all, but always forest. You arrive in Vagliano. After 50 meters, everything changes. The trees changes dramatically in 50 meters. And the air, the temperature, even if you are at the same altitude, it's always 500 meters. The air is different, the vegetation is different, the view from the hill is different. And this is what I want to try to explain as first. And this is what I want the producer to understand. Because sometimes the producer, you know, you have to sell the wines, you have to produce the wine, you have so many problems during the day that week after week, year after year, you are always focused on your property. And sometimes you do not even know your neighbor, okay? And what I want to do is to push the producer to know your neighbor, know what he is doing, not only hear what someone told you about this. Go there. Go to your neighbor, but not only your neighbor. Go, if you live in Castellina, come on, go to Panzano and what they are doing and why this district now in Chianti Classico is so famous compared to others. Why? There is something specific in the hillside. People are different. Come on, go there and look what is changing. And this is what I want to make with this map, with my map, really to force the producer to look at their territory in a different way.
I think the traditional viewpoint of Americans is often that, well, at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We're all different, but we're included in this thing. And I think often the traditional viewpoint of Italians is the opposite. At the end of the day, I am Umbrian from this place. You know, we eat this pasta, and it's a little bit of a different thing. And I think if an American map maker had gone and made the maps that you made, the approach would have been different as well.
In which way?
Well, it sounds to me, from what you just indicated there, that really what's most fascinating to you is the difference and where the difference stops.
Yeah. You're,
you know, it's kind of like where Margaret Mead, she wrote that the most interesting people were the people at the limits, people who didn't fit in. Of one or another, because they could tell you where the limits were in the society. Okay. You know, if someone was considered out of bounds in some of their behavior, either sexually or how they dressed, that told you what the rules were. And for you, I find that it seems, in your talking, that the boundaries, you know, where the boundary is of one thing changing to another is actually the most interesting part.
Not
the heart of the crew. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sure. Okay. This is absolutely true. This is really, is the boundary, is where the things are changing. Is that? But there are some natural boundaries, not only in wine. Our boundary in the wine region, but For example, if you drive along the road that goes from Monforte to Rodino, and if you have the opportunity to visit the properties on the left of the road and the properties on the right of the road, and you compare the way of approaching the wine production or the human relationship, are completely different. There is a road in the middle. On the right, 100 meters on the right, they have a completely different view of the world. And it's incredible. And this is for me, again, the boundary is the most fascinating side of this work. And because, you know, it's also a challenge to be more and more accurate in this kind of work. And I come back again to show to the producer that you are not making this job for joking. You are making this job very, very seriously. So if the boundary is there, there is an explanation why. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to say that I'm right, but every time there is an explanation. And for me, it's really important when you map a region, always to have an explanation.
So when you went through, the Barolo and Barbaresco maps were really, I think, what set your fame in the United States. So maybe we could talk about those first, although I know obviously you've done maps all around the world at this point. But when you went through Barolo and Barbaresco, what really surprised you?
It's the human relation. And this could explain why this region is so successful now. You know, when you meet someone and you feel immediately that he knows what he is doing, wow, there is something inside you that say, okay, now you can start learning something. And this is something that in Piedmont is so frequent, it happens so often. And this is one of the most important things for me. This is why I want to be there. Because behind a wine, there is always a man, a thinking man. And this is important. I come back to what I said at the beginning, that in the 90s, we journalists, we the producer, we did a lot of mistakes, but every time understood or understand, I don't know, where the mistake were and how to find a solution. And this is the real force of the Lange compared to other region, because other region that were successful in the 90s, they have always thought to be the best one in the world. And if you gave 85 points to their wines, it was you that you were wrong, not them, because they were perfect. In the Piedmont mentality, Piedmont producer mentality, there is always, yes, if you gave 85 points, they say, wah, wah, wah. They are not happy at all. But many of them, in their mind, start to ask a question, but why this guy give me 85 points? And then this one, too, gave me 86, and this one, 85 again. Maybe there is something wrong. Maybe we have to change. And if you look at the story of the last 20, 30 years in Barolo, it's like a trajectory of a satellite that you every time adjust a little bit because there is an asteroid, there is something like that, and you adjust. In other regions, for example, Tuscany, where you have a fantastic potential. For a very long time, they thought that this kind of wine, for example, a Super Tuscan, was the winning horse. Okay, so why we have to change? It's you. The market is accepting this kind of wine. So if you don't like this wine, it's not my problem. It's your problem. Okay, it's a journalist's problem. And the problem is that thinking in this way, the times arrived that market says, come on, stop. We are bored about this wine. And you are not ready to change in a way so fast that the market need. Okay? And this is a big problem, for example, in some region of Tuscany. They didn't follow this small changing in taste and opinion in the market and in the wine journalists. They thought that they were the best and this formula was the best one in the world. And this is why sometimes, for example, Super Tuscan in this moment are not so well accepted by the market.
You know, I'm someone who really likes Barolo and Barbaresco. And if I wanted to understand the crews better or the communes better, what are some simple guidelines that could help me do that? What are some things I should keep in the back of my mind if I want to understand the region?
Yeah. The only problem, I want to try to explain this. The only problem is that you would need a car because it's better to understand. If you have a car to drive around the region, you can understand the Barolo in an afternoon, not more. This is why many people say, oh, my Barolo is so complicated. Well, it's not so complicated at all. Because when you come from Alba, you enter from the main gate of the Appellation. So it's very simple. You have La Mora on your right at the top of the ridge, and then you have a ridge that is not the true boundary of the Appellation, but almost the boundary. And on your left, you can see the Serra Lunga Tower, and this is almost the eastern boundary. And you have the Appellation here, included between two ridges, so it's a sort of bowl. And inside this, you have the two boundary ridges and two other ridges in the middle, okay? If you want to identify in a 30 second where the best vineyards are, it's not a problem. You stand at the top of a hill or wherever, in Busia, or you can stay on the parking place in Serra Lunga or where you want. You look at the hour, it's maybe noon. So you look at the sun where it is. All the hillside that faces the sun are the best one. In 5 minutes, you can really understand where the best places are. But if you want to go in more detail, for example, Serra Lunga, there is a main ridge that goes north-south and other secondary ridges that start from the main one that have a southern face and northern face. Okay, when you understand the structure of the hill, you have nothing else to understand. Maybe from this point of view, Barbaresco is more complicated to explain because there are no specific guidelines, landscape guidelines that can help you. Maybe the only one, but you have to be very inside in this argument, is the ridge that goes from Soritildin up to Treso and up to the end of the Appellation. This is the only one that you can more or less understand immediately from the landscape point of view. Otherwise, all the other landscape detail are more difficult to explain, and this is why I've made this kind of explanation in the book with the 3D map, because it's on paper or in digital map, you can move the hillside to show where the most important things are. But when you are in the field, the hillside, and you cannot move the hillside. So there are some viewpoints, but the viewpoints in Barbaresco region are more difficult to find. And this is why it's difficult to explain the structure of the region. For example, if you go to La Mora, to the Belvedere di La Mora,
you can see everything.
There is nothing to explain because it's everything under your eyes. Is you can see perfectly the ridge of Castiglione, the ridge of Serra Lunga. You can see that even the two boundaries of the Appellation. In Barbaresco, there is almost no place where you can see each corner of the Appellation. You can see some specific spots, for example, the fantastic valley of Martinenga, Rabaia, Asili. Oh, this is, you can see perfectly, but you can see only a part of the Appellation. From this point of view, in the upper part of Paiore, you can maybe understand, if you are confident with this argument, why this valley is so famous. Because of the steepness of the hillside, of the exposure that are, in particular, very homogeneous from Asili to Rabaia, and so on. But I repeat, Barbaresco is more difficult to give you some few guidelines to explain. What is important about Barbaresco is that, for example, in the southern part of the Appellation, in the Treso township, usually the most cultivated grapes variety were Moscato and Dolcetto. Treso was very, very famous in the past for the quality of Dolcetto. The Dolcetto was really special in Treso. And every time people say that this is due to the altitude of the hillside, but it's not true, because if you compare the altitude of the hill, that side, it's lower than La Serra in Barolo, okay? What is the difference between the two? The problem is that the valley between Treso, Montersino, Meruzzano, and the other side of the valley, so Brico del Drago, Podere Colla, is not an open valley. It's very closed. It means that the altitude is not so elevated, but the flow of air is colder compared, for example, the Barolo region that, as I said before, is a kind of a bowl, okay? And La Serra is very elevated, but in this bowl, you have the radiation of the sun and the temperature usually is more elevated, even if you are at 500 meters of elevation. And this is why, if you go on the side of Rivalta, on the side that looks at the valley of Tanaro and Monviso, so the because if you are on the ridge of La Mora, if you go from north to south, on the left, you have the famous Cruso, Cerecchio, La Serra, Brunate, and so on. On the right side, you have the less famous Cruso of Novello, tipo Cioccini, as Cioccini, Lo Schetto, and so on. And if you look at the exposure, it's quite fantastic because sunny, windy, so no problem of disease or something like this, but you are more exposed to the cold wind, and for Nebbiolo this is a big problem, and this is why in that part of the region the Nebbiolo was less cultivated, because everything looks so nice, so fine, so perfect, but the wind, and so again the temperature, the changing in temperature are more strong compared to the other part we can call the classic, but it's not correct. But anyway, the most reputed part of the Appalachians, or Churecuda and so on. And this is why, coming back to Barbaresco, the altitude is not so different compared to the higher part of Barolo, but the valley is more closed in and the temperature is lower. That's why it's perfect for Moscato and Dolcetto. Again, with the changing in climate, things are changing as well.
I mean, that's really the difference I've seen, though, is that when I talk to Beppe Cola and Lorenzo Accomasso, they tell me that, you know, the south-facing vineyard is the better vineyard, kind of like what you said before. But when I talk to the younger producers now, they say, you know, maybe I get a little not south.
Yeah. I agree. If I have to choose between the two, I prefer to choose the Beppe Cola and Lorenzo point of view. It's true, okay. In 2003, in other very hot vintages, it's normal that some spots in the Canubi with sandy soils in the upper part, they have suffered a lot from drought. There was no water enough in that year. But, you know, it's one specific year in a decade. So I think that the most important clues are those clues where you have on 10 vintages, you have 8 excellent vintages. And this is the big difference. There are some other vintages that on 10 decades, you have 5 vintages. This is the big difference between the two. But it's difficult to compare the classic view of the crews of Beppe Cola and Lorenzo Accomasso with what we think about the crews now, because in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, the vineyards were cultivated in the same way everywhere in the Barolo region. This was the vine, these were the grapes, and that's all. No cutting of grapes, of exceeding grapes and something. Everybody produced in the same way. So in this situation, it's clear that the Grand Cru comes out immediately, because everybody works in the same way, usually huge production, because remember that they had to survive at that time. And so it's clear that Canubi, Cerecchio, Brunate were considered the best position. And someone told me about this, and it was a good explanation why Canubi is so famous compared to other places, because it was a early a ripening hill. And in the 70s, it was important to have an early ripening vineyard, because it means to pick up the grapes before the rainfall. And this is why Canubi was so famous. And coming to our era, less production, sometimes very tiny production, it's clear that if the gap, if in the 70s or in the 60s, the gap from between Cerecchio and another unknown, almost unknown vineyard was huge, now you can work as much as you can with Cerecchio, but the quality cannot go over 100, because 100 is the top. It is clear that all the other crews increase the quality, and the gap between Cerecchio and other crews is less than in the past. But it's due maybe to the climate, but I think first of all to the man, the way that you cultivate your vineyard.
So you've done many things. What is it that you'd like to do next in your career?
You know, every day I have a new project, I have a new idea. So really, I've never planned my life, my career. I'm sure that for 2-3 years, the mapping project would be my first project. But I'm not sure that in 4 or 5 years it will be the same, because I like to change. I think that we as journalists, we have to try in this. If in the past tasting wines and giving scores was maybe interesting and very important as well, I think that now, except for some iconic taster, and very reputed taster, all the other people working in wine publishing, we need ideas, we need new project, we need something different. And this is what I want to do. It's so sad to see people of 30 years old, 35 years old, spending all their time in tasting wine. Oh my God, yeah. My generation has done this. It's enough. your generation, yes, it's important to taste, of course, because if you do not taste, you do not know the wine, but cannot be your goal for all your life. You are a new generation. You have to produce something different from my generation. You have to give to me new ideas. It's not me at 55 years old to have new ideas. I hope to have new ideas in the future, of course, because I want to be in this business long as I can. But I want the new generation to make something different. But I'm not sure that this will happen in the future. Anyway, on my side, the last project is the Chianti Classico. It's the 3D map of the Chianti Classico. I always thought that 3D mapping is so fascinating, is so auto-explicative, because when you have a 3D map, there is nothing to write. There is nothing. It's there, you know? You have only to look and start to be fascinated on the difference, following the valleys, the mountain, and that's all. From the educational point of view, it's very easy with a 3D map on the table and 10 sommeliers around you. It takes 10 minutes to explain a region. Not more, because it's there. It's even better that use an helicopter and turn around 2 hours over the hillside of Barolo. It's better to have a 3D map on the table. The problem of the 3D map is that you cannot take your map and put in the car and drive around Barolo with your map. The printed map is much better. The printed map it's easier to use, and you can put in your car, and that's it. But I want to work on this 3D project in the next future, but I have many other things.
Alessandro Masnaghetti is most interested in the borders between where things change. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you so much to you, Levi.
Alessandro Masnaghetti is the editor of Enogia and the cartographer of many renowned wine maps.
This episode was made possible by Vinitaly, the world's largest wine fair, held each year in Verona, Italy. Do you live in the States and have a serious interest in Italian wine? There'll be a Vinitaly International Academy certification course held in New York City this year, starting on June 26th and going on through June 30th. If you're interested in becoming a certified ambassador of Italian wine and you'd like to attend the course in New York City, reach out to Via at vinitalytour.com. That's VIA at VINITALYTOUR.com. Go ahead and send them your contact information and they'll respond to you with what you need to do. If Italian wine is your passion, this is a great way to learn more about what you already love.
We have over 400 episodes of the All Drink to That podcast, but iTunes will only show you the latest 300 episodes unless you hit the subscribe button. So go ahead and hit that subscribe button. It's free. And you'll be able to see all our episodes, and you'll get our newest episodes even faster.